Hello and welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 180. Stepping up to the hockey. This week is James Gilmore.
Hello.
Peter Willingson.
Hello.
And Will the Thunderbolt Wilson. Because I throw my darts and it's like a thunderbolt because they don't actually reach the board. They just crash into the ground.
It isn't a real sport. It is. It's on telly and everything.
It's got numbers. It's got numbers in the scores.
And you know which one's best by how many rings they've got on their hands. That's how you tell.
Actually, that's true.
True.
How many gold rings have you got?
Exactly. 40. Oh, you must be a grandmaster.
Grandmaster.
Then they just go home. That's it. They just compare hands and then get drunk, and that's easy. It's a brilliant sport.
I quite like playing darts down the pub.
Yeah, but then it's, you know, it's not a sport, is it? It's not. I'm sorry, it's not. It's just repetitive strain injury inducing. That's all it is.
I'd say that there's probably less physical exertion in darts than there is in playing a first-person shooter.
Yeah, that's
true. You have to stand up.
As is demonstrated by the less than athletic physiques, let's say. But that gives you good center of gravity, I suppose, for the for the flinging.
Yeah.
I guess that's training.
So yes, it's episode 180. We're back. We should crack into the news.
Crack into it.
Yeah, because someone lost.
News!
All right, here we are. Sorry, I'll just get the lights. There we go. The staff have all gone home today, striking. Again,
is this related to last week when people were like, they left over like delicate circumstances?
Well, there have been some rumours going around. Yeah,
I hear you're a bit of a taskmaster, Will.
Look, I don't use the whip as much as jockeys do. And that's considered humane for horses. So, you know,
for humans. So if it's good enough for horses.
It's good enough for horses, it's good enough for me.
Yeah.
It's when you start turning them into glue that I start getting worried.
That's not been confirmed. That was only in that Panorama report. And as you'll notice, I never confirmed it. Even when they showed me the photographs.
Which were stuck to the wall using the glue.
I did think it was quite ironic. As I said at the time to the judge. but yes, anyway, so I'll stop twiddling my moustache. What's up this week? I guess we should start with... we should make this a regular feature from now on. I think that there's not going to be any stopping in it for ever. There's new iPhone rumours.
No. No. Never.
No. Really? This one's actually been around for a while in terms of... I mean, you could tell the genuine ones... normally from the DigiTimes ones because they're not as interesting, if you go what I mean. They're not like, you know, Apple's created a phone which can transmutate into doves. It's more Apple are going to be using a smaller dock connector for their next phone, which is the rumor this week.
And you know what, that makes sense. It's one of those things of when I got my 4S, like I was looking at it thinking, this is, you know, a beautiful bit of design, it's absolutely gorgeous. What's this bit at the bottom? A big like chunky hole, and it's just kind of, it looks completely at odds with the Apple philosophy of design of just
do you think so, I've been pacing around like for the last 4 years going like cursing that hole, if we could remove that's probably why he looks so annoyed in his staff profile picture on the Apple website.
He's like, if only this could be 19 pins instead of 30.
19 is the magic number, so Just wait till Jobs is out of the way, and then I'm going to go in there. I'm going to yoink 11 pins out, gleefully cackling like a maniac.
He's going to be really happy in the next promo video. Sat in the white screen, like in front of the white screen.
We did it. We did it.
That's all he says throughout his whole montage bit.
Yeah,
so there we go. It's pretty much confirmed now. There's three different sources all confirming it, all different. Well, there are three different accessory manufacturers confirming it. So.
Oh, okay.
And obviously they'll be informed. So. Wow. Yeah, so it's pretty much certain. But this, of course, the annoying thing is that for people like me who tend to misplace power connectors, I've kind of been had a get out of jail free card in the last few years because I got the iPod Touch and the iPad, and I've lost one of them, but the other one works just fine. So now I'm going to be a bit stuck.
Yeah, I tend to do most of my charging through USB ports and stuff, so I'm still okay. Nah. Oh, no, I won't be. No, wait, if I swap up to an iPhone, I won't be. But generally speaking, I suppose that's one of the benefits of some of the other things. Sony Ericsson's always had that funny, pointy, long one with the teeth, didn't they? That was always quite
the good. One that growled.
Oh, the growled. Yes, that was the one. Yes, the power injector. that was always handy because I had a bunch of them and a long line, but they all used the same one. So, yeah, that was get out of jail free. But now I'll have to look after stuff. God.
But the other iPhone news this week, as in hardware news, is that they're not usually this vocal about it, which is surprising. But Foxconn CEO, i.e. the makers, as in the manufacturers of the iPhone, has gone out to say that Samsung Galaxy S... Well, the iPhone 5 will put the Galaxy S3 to shame. And he even went further than that. He has made it his mission to defeat the South Korean company, a company that he's described has a track record of snitching on its competitors.
I love this story, and the main reason that I love this story is that I am imagining the CEO in with a sideways baseball cap on and really baggy jeans and maybe a basketball top on. And he's snitches get stitches, yo. Really sort of sat at his office desk, this absolutely beautiful, super clean, Foxconn office. And he's just yeah, go take down those Samsung boys, you know what I'm saying? love it.
Well, they came into their turf, and they snitched on their fellow countrymen.
You can't do that if I've learned anything from hip hop, it's that you do not mess with high end consumer technology manufacturers. You don't snitch on them. It's just that's not something you do.
No. They'll put a cap in your market cap.
Yeah, exactly. did Biggie and Tupac not teach us anything? I'm sorry.
I don't think they ever picked a fight with any major technology giants, which I think says something. I think that supports your
yeah, exactly.
Thing.
Exactly.
It's the one golden rule.
Yeah.
But snitches, they're getting stitches. And Fox, it's not. They don't normally come out and say this, which is a little bit surprising. Normally, Foxconn stay quite quiet for their manufacturing.
Do you think they feel is this a sign of not weakness, but is this a sign of threat? They usually stay quiet because the reception that the Samsung 3, the S3 got was quite big. I mean, you got a load of pre-orders, millions of pre-orders, and it's been selling quite well and stuff. Do you think that they are a little bit concerned, maybe?
No, I don't think they are. I mean, they don't care how the Galaxy S3 sells because they just care about the sales of the iPhone 5, but I guess it's that they, I know indirectly they'll be concerned, but I think it's mainly because they just got so big now. They are kind of like the superstar electronics parts manufacturer in the world in a way because of their deals with Apple, and their factories are mighty big. They're like the size of small towns in Britain, and they're all over the world now, all pumping out Apple parts. So I guess he's sort of
just shouting out whatever he likes with no fear of reproach.
People will report on him now. Because, I mean, I guess it's kind of funny because they became so well known in the public eye because of all of the factory scandals. Before then, no one knew who Foxconn were over in the West, unless you're in, I don't know, electronics business, actually making the parts. But, I mean, and now they're kind of people know the name. Because of suicide.
It's insidiously anonymous with suicide. Exactly. Great. That's good to know.
It's tough in the electronic ghetto, isn't it? Really. It's.
It is.
Oh Lord. I used to like the snitching. I like defeat. I always like when people say defeat or destroy in these terms. because then it sounds like some kind of gigantic like battle thing going on.
Yeah, he's going to get out of his desk with his baseball top on, and he's going to walk over to the Samsung offices and go, "Hey, you coming out?
Yes.
What did you call my mum?
Show your face, Samsung."
And then you scared.
Mr. Samsung will peek out of his window.
Oh no, I went too far.
An S voice next to him will go, "Dee dee. Are you sure you should be going out there? I think I'm gonna have to."
Shut up, S voice. I don't pay you to think.
Yes. Anyway, so that's what's happening in the world of manufacturing. Talking of more sort of software-based, let's keep on the sort of hardware techie theme. Unity is also being a bit bullish this week. It's just released the development build for its Unity 4 graphics engine, and it has said that it will change the industry.
Wowzers.
Well, they've done it once before.
I'd certainly say they've done it quite quietly as well, I think.
Yeah.
Mm. Again, this is another change. Not normally, we don't normally get Unity doing an epic, because you know how epic any single small improvement to the engine is like. It's like they come out the signs going, "Look, it won't run on anything right now.
Obviously,
but in about 5 years,
look at all these shades of grey."
I know, it's amazing. I can see every bit of stubble on Marcus Fenix's face.
Smoke a cigarette. It's itchy.
Anyway, so yeah, Unity don't normally do this. They normally just talk directly to developers. But yeah, no, they've become so big now that now they've got a bit more of a platform. So yeah, Unity 4 is due out. It's got promising hyper modern graphics on mobile, and by extension, PS Vita, browsers, Facebook, every platform under the sun, basically.
Well, I guess as the popularity of the whole mobile thing and mobile games increase, the more and more people play this. I mean, one of the really good looking Unity 3 games, I mean, it's Shadow Guns one of them, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
That's pretty good looking. What are the other pretty ones?
There's Epoch or Epic.
The cover shooter, yeah.
Or is that Unity or is that Unreal, actually? I'm just starting to think. Maybe that's Unreal. Yeah. I remember.
I'm just getting confused because they're both called Begin With You and have an N in it as well.
They are so close in terms of what they can produce, I guess. But I guess if you work on them on a technical level, there's going to be quite a lot of differences. I mean, the fact that Unity covers so many platforms is its big advantage as well.
Yeah.
And I've only heard good things about it from actual people who do stuff with code. So
these number jockeys. They know what they're talking about.
But the big new feature for it, the reason why it's going to be hyper-modern, as opposed to just modern, is that there's a new animation system is the key to it. Although there are other dazzling features as well.
I hope that means that it makes it brilliant animation without too much hassle, because the problem with all these wonderful hyper-modern graphics is, you know, if you've heard good things from other developers, that's reassuring, because a lot of times people complain that investing all this time into the amazing graphics, you know, ups budgets and takes time away from
that's
doing
the art.
Actual
no,
the, gameplay.
That's creating art assets, though, mainly.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's more sort of like the
just getting it all to work.
Right, yeah, getting it work. And I guess the advantage of Unity is you program it once and it's basically ready to go.
And as titles do become more and more complex on iPhone, the price of entry remains very, very low, or and is becoming more and more free. I think this sort of direction is absolutely where the industry wants to be heading. Like, you know, if you're going to create something that looks amazing because you have to compete with everybody else, at some point the model of finance for it becomes so great that what you're creating is amazing, but your actual return on it's not so great. So with stuff like, from what I've heard, talking to people, Unity is one of those things of, like you say, you know, you create it once, it's everywhere, but it is also fairly easy to create stuff for. You can be a small team and create something quite impressive. And I think that's really important.
Yeah, it's something that people forget when talking of engines, because people on forums who, remember, I advised you not to listen to, whatever they say, think the opposite. They always consider that the engine is literally just the graphics, but it's not. It's the way of communicating to the machine. So the engine can be lots of different elements. I mean, Unreal Engine isn't just the graphics either. It does have its own animation stuff as well. So it's just those tools. So the more powerful the tools, then the less work that needs to be done on the other side. So all you need to do is, you know, the art, and then, you know, make adjustments to it, but it's sort of the how it powers. That's why it's called an engine. It's not just graphics. But anyway, let's move on and go to a good example of how slow TV companies work. Yeah. CBS in America land has won the rights to bring Zynga's, or rather Omega Pops, Draw Something to TV. This is about a month or two after Draw Something has kind of died.
Yes. This is odd. Well, I mean, you can see why they picked it up, because despite being incredibly late to the game, this isn't, even if this game didn't exist, this is not a new thing. Win, Lose, or Draw was around in the late 80s, wasn't it? Early 90s or something? They've had these Pictionary format games before, and everyone's kind of, you know, I suppose, watch them. Draw Something's, I suppose, made it more popular, pushed it more into the public consciousness of late. But it is funny that they've just decided to pick it up. They've announced it with this kind of, yay! It's like such a muted fanfare, because you're like, well, oh yeah, that game I've stopped playing now.
Well, when it does come out on American TV, it'll be round about the same time as it comes out on Windows Phone.
Yep.
Wow.
Always first to the party if the party's over.
But to put a positive spin on it, you know, the story we've got talks about how viewers will be able to play at home, play along with the game, and you know, LA is becoming more and more. The focuses of the television studios are becoming more interested in new technology and getting people involved in, you know, sort of cross-platform, cross-media endeavors. It's why, you know, there are so many apps and Facebook games and that sort of thing for the most popular TV shows over there. It's not, you know, necessarily because it's a great IP, it's because they want to keep people within this circle of becoming invested with the actual show. And with this, where you can play along at home, like, this is something that, like, I was, you know, dreaming about like 15 years ago of like, oh, wouldn't it be fantastic if you could play along at home rather than like phone in, or like on Live and Kicking, like phone in and like play a little game, you know, with Andy Peters or whatever it is, that little troll game. I can't.
Hugo the troll.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but this is actually moving much, much closer to that. And there are really good monetization options for these people to get involved with this, you know, much like Microsoft tried with their
100-to-1 thing.
Is that what it is? Yeah, what? I'm terrible with names today. you know, and doing that and giving it that sort of full brunt push and putting it out on CBS, which is obviously, you know, they're massive. This is really, really exciting, and it's going to sort of blur the line between games and television.
Well,
you guys aren't excited, are you?
No, not really, no.
I'm desperately excited about this.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I saw it on TV the first time round. The idea of, like, being able to guess at home, I suppose, is cool. And I imagine, I assume you'll have to download a separate app. I don't know if they'd update the existing app so that you can just, like, type in your own options or anything. And I imagine it would just turn up, like, on... I'm imagining it'd be like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire when they poll the audience and it shows you the percentage of people that got it right or wrong. I imagine that'll be, and I can be like, oh, I'm 0.0001% of that figure. Ooh, yay me. But beyond that, I don't know.
Well, I know I've got another bit of news that's going to get Peter excited, but not for the same reasons. EA's big man, COO Peter Moore, as opposed to, I don't know why I stressed Peter there, Peter Moore, as opposed to Clive Moore, the CEO of EA. No, COO Peter Moore has told Kotaku that the majority of games will be free to play within the next 5 to 10 years. That's not just mobile, that's every game. Free to play. Majority.
Yeah. Right.
Is this good?
I think ultimately those microtransactions will be in every game. But the game itself, or the access to the game, will be free.
Yeah. Yeah. I wouldn't.
It's free for me to walk into the gap.
Yeah, oh,
in
God,
my local shopping mall. They don't charge me to walk in there. I can walk into the gap, enjoy the music, look at the jeans, and what have you? But if I want to buy something, I have to pay for it.
I love the way that Peter Moore here describes how retail works.
Yes. It's just like, what a grasp on the mind.
I only got this wrong once. The officer was very kind and explained how shopping works.
I like
that's
the fact he's like,
games will be free.
I like the fact he somehow thinks that walking into Gap and looking around is the same as playing a free game. That's going to the app store and looking through the games. Yeah. It would be his metaphor doesn't work. I mean, free to play would be the equivalent of putting on the jeans, wearing it for 2 weeks, and then paying a little bit of money for them.
Yeah.
If you wanted no holes.
Yeah. Or a belt to keep them
or
up.
A belt or it to not fall apart.
Yeah, or them not someone to walk up and strip them off you in the middle of the street.
Or the ability to wear it for more than 5 minutes at a time.
Before having to let them recharge, yeah. The thing with this is there's a good chance he's right. Or there's a good chance that he's more than halfway right. Every time people complain about free to play, of which, you know, I am one of those people who does complain about it, I've yet to see it implemented in the best ways is when it's very unintrusive, when it's tucked into the background.
They're also the least profitable kinds of free to play.
Isn't that strange? It's bizarre, though, isn't it? Yeah. So the rest of them, when I find they're all flashing in your face, I find it obnoxious and it interferes and it's irritating. But figures or statistics seem to show, from what we've read, that it does make money. Everyone's turning to free-to-play for a reason, aren't they? All the developers are using it as a business model because it seems to be generating cash. And if they've all been looking into it for a while, I guess they think it is going to go that way. And he may be right. I'm not exactly over the moon about it.
Why not? Why not?
Yeah.
You're gonna get a game for free.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the experience that you want with it, and if you want to pay up to, you know, let's go with the American terms here. If you want to pay up to $60 to get the amount of content, it doesn't matter either way, does it?
Well, no. I suppose I guess it's got to do with a mindset, and the way that I viewed it is like, it's the same way I view anything. If I buy any product, I would much rather buy the product outright, have it, and then not worry about it from then on in. Enjoy it in its full capacity from the beginning.
Why?
Because I don't like being pestered at every point of play. What is essentially a sales pitch.
You can buy cover plan for this product, you know.
you'd rather go into a store and pay 40 quid for a game that you may or may not like, rather than pay 20 quid for a game and get it for free and then eventually pay about 20 quid for a bunch of trinkets and DLCs.
I think the main problem is it affects the game design. That's the big
problem. But it doesn't necessarily have to. Like, it doesn't have
to. No, but the problem is they're chasing money. I mean, the whole idea of it going all free-to-play is in the pursuit of more money because, of course, development costs have gone up. Yeah. But unfortunately, the most profitable free-to-play games are the worst free-to-play games in the critical point of view. So you have the Farmvilles, etc., blah, blah, blah. The least amount of gameplay, the least amount of originality, are rewarded with money. So there is no incentive. There's no financial incentive. There is a sort of creative incentive for going beyond it, but you won't make as much money as if you just sort of let it go for this rubbish, I mean, some people like it, but I don't think they like it in the same way that someone like a core gamer would like a game. They just like it because it's something to do. It's not that it's a good
suggesting
game.
That model is exactly what's going to happen for the rest, you know, saying that that's going to be the most profitable way, you know, that free to play works forever is kind of,
well, they've already tried the free to play, which is the one where you get the first part of the game for free and then you pay for the rest. That was shareware, and that was back in like the 90s. It didn't last very long.
Shareware did pretty well.
It didn't last very long.
Okay, but like,
one game that really benefited a lot from shareware, and that was Doom. And it didn't have great sales originally.
Jill of the Jungle.
Freaking Jungle.
I just think that, yeah, right now, absolutely, the way that free-to-play games are right now, yeah, it's obnoxious, it's horrible, and it's disgusting, and I absolutely would not want that in, you know, the majority of games. But to say that that's the way that it's always going to go forward, I don't think that that's the case. And I think that somebody, and it will take somebody like a massive corporation like EA to come in and actually inject a bunch of money, do a load of failures, and then go on and get the success. It's going to take somebody like EA to figure out how you make a profitable freemium game.
No, I don't think it's going to be EA leading the charge here. I mean, I've played their console games, some of their most recent ones, and they could all but be free-to-play games, except they charge you before you go in. I mean, Tiger Woods 13, I played that on the PS3 the other month, and it is literally just pages upon page of adverts. Buy these balls, buy these clubs, unlock this course, unlock that course. And it's like, I've paid 30 bloody pounds. Why are you telling me how much extra I can buy? And it's like, this is the EA way of doing it. I mean, they might change it eventually, but the people like Valve and League of Legends, that's the more sort of interesting, because League of Legends is quite original with its approach. Some of the more sort of not EA PC game makers, they've got some interesting ones. I mean, the cosmetic ones in Team Fortress, I have no idea who would want to buy them. But, I mean, they seem to be successful, so someone buys them. I mean, that's the sort of non-game-breaking good thing. But it won't work for every game. But we'll see. It's provoked quite a few strong comments on the on our website as well. So if you want to dive on board there, you'll have to get past our really annoying commenting system. We are going to change it soon, but we also know it's incredibly frustrating. But, you know, overcome that hurdle and get on board the discussion. But I'm going to cut it short here because I've got one more news story to go to, which is that this game looks, well, it sounds quite interesting. I'm cautiously optimistic. Red Lynx, ex-employees of Red Lynx, have set up a new studio called Frog Minds, and they're working on a title which they say, in their words, is inspired by Limbo and Machinarium.
Yay. Genuine yay this time, because I like those games, especially Machinarium. Machinarium's great. And these fellows worked on Trials and Moto Heroes.
Moto Heroes, yeah.
Yeah. And
Moderators. Yeah, Moderators.
Yes, and those grand, although both of those are obviously physics racing games, so it's interesting to see how they're gonna translate their knowledge of motorbikes into creepy little atmospheric
it'll be a game about a motorbike looking for his way home. His eyes will be his front headlights.
I'd still play it, frankly. if they get it right, and if they can make it anywhere near the caliber of these two. I mean, two guys from a good studio, and any game that says, or any game designer that says, it's choosing to focus on atmosphere gets my interest, whether they pull it off or not. It's just that makes a huge difference for me personally. I suppose I'm into those slightly arty things, and atmosphere counts for a lot.
For me, I only care about the number of guns.
I know.
different types of gun that I can use in the game.
Yeah.
How many has this one got?
And you're not even joking.
No buy.
Yes, but there's so much more. so much more open your mind and your soul or something. Or instead of your ammo belt.
Done that before. Not again. So yes, that's it for the news this week. Stay tuned. I don't know why I would say that. Stay tuned for the next part of the show where we walk into the new releases roundabout and Peter has a revelation.
Ooh. By the way, you would totally call it handlebar horror, wouldn't you, if it was a motorbike horror game? I would totally call it that. Or I'd call it wheelie scary.
Wheelie scary. That's really good.
Thanks.
Hello. Anyway.
All right. Okay, let's go to the new releases roundabout.
Previously on the new releases roundabout.
It was very highly rated back in the day. I think our review's already gone up. Neon minimalist graphics, they don't.
It's more than the sort of typical flight game on iPhone.
It's got a soundtrack. Better turn that off.
Pocket Gamer crew have looked at last week's releases, but what did this week hold?
Hello and welcome to the new releases roundabout. Busy as usual. We have first up this week is a Universal app from Adult Swim, Velociraptor. So yes, I believe you've got to control the hand of God, which is a green hand, trying to smite different dinosaurs.
Oh. I always thought it was because it was a meteorite, wasn't it? Or a particularly bad earthquake?
That's
or
God wanted you to think.
Oh, I see. Well, Adult Swim are usually quite good at this sort of stuff, aren't they?
Yeah, they publish some pretty bizarro, weird, but relatively pretty good games. So.
Yeah. So there's hope there. The screens look like the standard Adult Swim stuff if you've played Monsters Ate My Condo or anything like that. Colourful and bright, and there's always a chance with these things. And, you know, smiting dinosaurs, that's fun. Who doesn't like dinosaurs?
Well, you've got to not like dinosaurs to smite them.
Well, I suppose. So in that case, it might fail. Everyone likes dinosaurs, so no one's going to want to smite them. Although maybe your God complex would win out. Maybe you like being God more than you like dinosaurs.
Well, this is going to be a moral conundrum for a lot of people out there. But if you want to take that moral maze, 69p99. Asphalt 7 from Gameloft is also out this week, or as the announcer would go, Asphalt 7 is out this week. Ripping, roaring coach cars. Fast, you get a fast car with smoke. I hate the announcer, and she's back again.
Is it always the same girl?
No, it's just like Asphalt 6 introduced her. And everyone, I don't think there's a single review which said, you know what, the announcer's really good. They all said, she's really annoying. Miami, fast cars, hot sun, nitro boosting, da-da-da. Shut up, I just want to race. Skip.
It's almost like they're trying to... The more this series goes on, the more I think they're trying to do a Ridge Racer. Like... By introducing that character, it's a bit like the main sort of lady from... Is her name Naoki, I think her name is? From those series. Like, I keep getting the feeling that that's what they're going for. Like, arcadey, like super arcadey, but zeroing in on like an audience almost, like Ridge Race is doing. But
Are you suggesting that Gameloft is attempting to emulate another game?
I wouldn't say that at all. I would never suggest.
Well, good. I'm borderline offended.
Thanks. Looks good though. Looks really good, this version of Asphalt.
Yeah, it's not bad. I had a go on at E3. It looks very nice. It's got lots of nice graphical effects. Lots of fast cars. And it's got lots of skin to let the trap. To use the restaurant. In single player or multiplayer. So,
but I suppose, is she trying there? There must be a level of enthusiasm. Because you remember those really, I always liked the Resident Evil ones because it sounds like the person like really doesn't want to do it. You know what I mean? There's that kind of like...
Well, she sounds half bored and half like, There's no sort of middle ground. She doesn't really sound, I don't know, she's just annoying. You can't shut her up as well, because the introductions are the worst. I think they've cut down the length of the introductions this time, thank God. But then she says stuff during the race, like when you hit the cars and stuff. Nice work. Oh, he's not going to be getting out of that. Shut up. Anyway, that's Asphalt 7 Heat, which is now for the bargain price of $6.99. But it does have in-app purchases, but you don't have to buy them. Thank goodness it's not a freemium Gameloft game now. Centipede Origins. If there was any game that I thought would need an origin story, Centipede would be the one. What happened before the classic shoot 'em up came to be? So Centipede is back, and so is Atari. It's now isometric, from what I can see, in Centipede Origins. Yeah. I'm sure we've all played a version of Centipede down the years, haven't we?
Yeah, and I played the stunning sequel, Millipede.
Oh, Millipede.
and then they ran out of, like, multi-legged insects.
Yeah, and they were like,
where'd you go from Millipede?
They were like, right, lads, give this 25 years, we'll do Centipede Origins.
Oh, yes. Rayman, that Rayman worked out well. Centipede Origins, that's the future. Yeah.
It's 69p99 cents, it's got a customer review here which says decent but plagues by IAPs.
Oh.
Oh dear.
Don't worry, that'll be brilliant in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. It'll be the norm.
Yeah. You just like shopping in Gap.
No, not shopping. Just listening to the music and Gap. Just walking in there, listening to the music for free.
Oh, it's Peter Moore again. Staff just getting standing really annoyed. Yeah. He never buys anything. He never buys anything.
They're looking at the jeans.
Do you think when he's listening to his car radio, he tries putting money in the slot?
Like, he really likes
listening to the music for free. I need to pay for this. Fish Heroes is our next by Crane Balls or Crambles, because they've again named themselves all one word. We've got a video for this. I can watch the video while I describe it. And it's a teaser trailer. Does it have any gameplay?
It does. It looks a little bit like 3D Angry Birds.
Oh yeah, it's Angry Birds again, isn't it?
No, it is. It's a blocky Angry Birds underwater.
Yep.
Which you can't even say is an original thing now, because now Angry Bird Seasons has Piglantis, which is also underwater. So
this is
and Shark Dash as well.
Yeah, this is the second Angry Birds in 3D game out in 2 weeks as well, because there was Catapult Hero, wasn't it, last week? Or was that the week before? No, it was the week before. But anyway, yes, so that's out. It's probably 69p. Let me check. It's 69p, 99 cents. Boom Brigade 2 is out from 10 Tons, who are the makers of the delightful Joining Hands. if you've played the original, then you should know what it's all about. But it's effectively line drawing meets tower defense. So you get your troops and you draw lines for them to move around while they're firing. It's sort of tower defense, but it's not really. It's more like real-time strategy where you're... It's like a pure real-time strategy where you're defending a location rather than tower defense.
I quite like the immediacy of the line drawing dynamic.
I thought you were going to say Amiga then.
The immediacy of the Amiga.
Well, it looks kind of like Amiga graphics, though, doesn't it?
I guess.
Yeah, it does. A lot, actually.
You're right. But no, the line drawing's mostly been used for things like jet rocket.
I'm waiting for you to just get it. It's fun. Flight Control.
Flight Control, yes. Flight Control and Flight Control Rocket. There you go.
And Spy Mouse, of course.
And Spy Mouse, yeah. But usually it's used just to guide things somewhere. If it's being used in a troop controlling aggressive capacity, that's quite good. There's something not I find tactile, very pleasurable about drawing the line on the thing and having them follow it exactly, rather than just tapping the place you want your troop to go and having them mooch on. You know, in their own way, the actual physical act of you carving a route. I don't know. It makes me feel much more involved, much more in control of what's going on. So I quite like, and rather than just guiding people into runways or whatever, using it for a real time strategy seems to make good sense. Although I suppose if there's huge amounts of troops, it could get pretty hectic. You have to have 12 fingers on the screen at any one time. But I like the idea. I'm down.
Well, it's available as a universal app now for £1.99, $2.99. Soccer Superstars 2012 is also out this week from Gameville. I'm half tempted to download this because that baseball one was absolutely mad. Like, mental.
I did look into this one. Yes, it's like you half football management, half actually playing, you know, real time, physically playing the game as well, but with kind of insane anime power up nonsense as well.
Does it have a story as well?
I don't.
Story on the baseball one was mental.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It involved, like, there was one bit in the first, if ever people would know from earlier podcasts, there's a bit near the start where you basically get, they swapped out their pitcher and put in a god or some sort of demon. And I was like, I can't play against this. Like, the ball was just going, he didn't even throw the ball. He teleported it. So I had no way of reacting. I was just standing there and playing going, okay. And then you got into like romance with like a girl who keeps hiding your balls.
Oh yeah.
Very odd. And there was a girl dressed up as a tiger.
Of course there was.
Anyway, Soccer Superstars 2012 is out now for free from Gameville. The Axe is also out this week. It's quite a big week, isn't it? We've got three more to go. So, The Axe from Chilingo, an interactive comedy, says the screen. Or if you want that translated, it's Dragon's Lair.
Which was brilliant. Newer. Oh, no, wait. No, wait. Can this work nowadays? I mean, like, Dragon's Lair was kind of a novelty at the time because it was like, wow, it's a fully interactive cartoon that I can interact with, until you tried to play it and realized you couldn't really interact much at all, and it was actually kind of rubbish. You can't tell from the trailer, can you? Because just the trailer looks like it's advertising a new film or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah.
You can't tell what the gameplay involves. Occasionally,
well, that is the gameplay.
Yeah, and just say yes or no.
You swipe, like on that window cleaning bit, you swipe right to go over to your brother, like when your boss is about to look out, and then you swipe left when the boss isn't looking. It's kind of like that, you know. It looks nice, not much to the actual gameplay, though. I mean, yeah. Interestingly, you say that you mentioned like Dragon's Lair, it wouldn't really work today kind of thing. What would their reaction be today? This was an arcade game in 2006. Which was prototypes and sort of had a very limited release, and then it wasn't successful enough, so they stopped it in 2007. So, I mean, the answer to that is no.
No. Well, they kept trying to. There was a project, because I saw it when I was looking around at the back end. There's been a project to kind of revive Dragon's Lair for ages, and they did eventually, didn't they? You can get hold of Dragon's Lair now on some platform or another, can't you?
Well, they've got a lot. Dragon's
yeah,
Lair.
Yeah.
It's on every platform.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Since the 3DO and the CDI, you could get it everywhere.
Runs on my fridge.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I did my best to sort of steer well clear of it, frankly, because, you know, it had its time back when an animated game was impressive, and it no longer is anymore. So,
interesting coincidence. Dragon's Lair was drawn by Don Bluth, who's ex-Disney, and The Axe was drawn by ex-Disney animators.
That's why it looks so nice.
That's why it looks so nice. Look at that. It's so smooth.
It is. Don't play it, though.
Yeah, you don't really play it. £1.99. Wow, I like the first customer review. A hugely enjoyable game, says Terry555. One star.
He's conflicted, Terry155, isn't he?
This is genuinely laugh out loud funny. An astonishing amount of effort is clearly going into this. One star. Anyway, so The Act is available now for £1.99 or $2.99. Second to last, penultimate, James Noir's Hollywood Crimes.
There's some sick people out there, believe me. We cleaned it up, but we still can't open it.
I'm reading out the screenshot there.
Make any sense.
No, I know. And if you look at the puzzle to his right, it's literally a single puzzle piece covering an image.
How do we work this out? It looks like a jigsaw.
We've cleaned it up, but there's something missing.
Oh.
This is just like real detective work.
Yeah, so James Noir's Hollywood Crimes did come out originally on the 3DS. It was a launch title, was it? No, it wasn't launched, but it was very close.
No, it was very close to it, and it wasn't massively well received.
No, and it didn't sell very well at all.
No.
Interestingly, Ubi hasn't mentioned that in any of their pre-release press releases, or indeed their app description.
Oh, they've gone in dry. Here's our new game. New,
I think
totally
they're hoping
new.
Most people and most sites are just going to forget about it. Forget about it. Never happened. It's a completely original iOS adventure. Just so happens to look a bit like a 3DS adventure. Yes, but it is not, obviously it's not in 3D, but it's got a lot of puzzles. 150 mind games, which I guess means calling you weak. Yeah, and it's got a rather easy-looking puzzle from what we can see from the screenshot.
Single jigsaw piece. If you have a single jigsaw piece, this is the game for you.
What? Yeah. Play the main character and get immersed in 1960s Hollywood. Or don't. It is available for free, but it is £1, actually £1.49 to unlock the game. So there you go. You can try out Chapter 1 and see if you enjoy it. Yesterday
so far away
is also out.
They must stop naming these games after songs, because nothing but bad things happen.
So yeah, Yesterday is the adventure game. It's dark, it's mysterious, it's from the PC, and it, let me just get up. It's Pendulo, isn't it?
Yes.
Spanish developers, he says, throwing that one out there.
Amazing.
It's got very nice, sort of interesting stylized 3D, almost cel-shaded S.
Yeah, almost but not quite, isn't it? It's quite
almost but not quite. I've played it, and I'm going to tell you now, it's not amazing.
Oh, no.
Uh-huh.
I'll give you a clue as to why.
Go on, then.
The first puzzle involves picking a lock. How do you think that is done?
I would imagine using rubbing my fist at the screen. Just
mashing my face against the screen.
You're not too far away. What you have to do is you have to, in the pile of rubbish, you have to pick out a Coke can. Then you've got to find a penknife. Then you've got to strip the Coke can with the penknife, and then you have to use an aluminium strip from the Coke can to pick the lock.
Right, so this
That's the first puzzle!
Right, okay, so this comes from the King's Quest, King's Quest and, like, Police Quest style of...
Adventure game logic.
Yeah.
That's the first puzzle, though. I mean, Police Quest's first puzzle was to check the tires of the car or something.
Yeah, something like that. But it comes from this. That sounds like it comes from this idea of, like, players trying to profile the developers to, like, how do they want me to do this?
Yeah.
One thing I would say is that James Noir is the lead character of Hollywood Crimes, and Yesterday's character is called Henry White. What is it with first English name and then, like, colour?
Those two should get together, like Gozer, the Keymaster and the Gatekeeper.
Oh, that would be...
Who knows what would happen?
Open up a gate to a dimension filled with horrible named characters.
A dimension filled with Bill Murray.
Yesterday is out now, though. It's priced at £2.99, $4.99 for the first days. Says the description mysteriously.
Okay, but not for the last days.
Nor yesterday's.
Okay.
There we go. That's it. New releases. Let's move on to the what we have been playing fields.
What we've been playing!
Hello. Welcome. Come in. Yeah.
Coming in, it sounds scary.
Beach towel, £1. Deck chair, £3.
We're on the wall. We've been playing fields. And I will go first this week, because I like going first. This week, I've been playing Magic the Gathering. I've been playing it quite solidly this evening, in fact. I haven't played it during the podcast, but my God, I was tempted while I was talking. So yes, I really like it. It's Magic the Gathering, Jewels of the Planeswalkers, 2012. There's no extra bits to that, but I've been I've been adding the game based on the card game that you find in Games Workshop as well to the title. Yeah, so if you've not played Jewels of the Planeswalkers before on PC or console, it is kind of like a not a basic introduction to Magic, because Magic is Magic the Gathering, I mean, not actual Magic. That'd be weird.
But awesome.
But awesome, yeah. It's not a basic introduction, but it is kind of an intermediate beginner introduction in the sense that, well, I'll do this in three different parts. I'll explain it to experienced newcomers and then whatever. So if you never played Magic before, it's a card collecting game where basically you have a deck of 60 cards or more, and with all these different creatures and spells and stuff, and you play them every turn. You play land, which is your power, and then you use this land to cast these creatures into the game. And the idea is to kill the other wizard or wizards by taking away all his hit points, killing his creatures and stuff like this. It's very, very well balanced. It's quite an old game now. In fact, it was the very first card collecting game, so you can blame it for the existence of, say, Pokemon collecting game and any other cards games that you see in Games Workshop. But yes, but the reason why it was so popular and why it's lasted so long is because it's so well balanced in the fact that you can never really sort of have an overpowered... Well, maybe you could, but I haven't ever had that. So, but anyway, for people who have played Magic the Gathering in the card game sense, but not playing the Jewels of the Planeswalkers, the most interesting thing to know is that you get 10 different kinds of decks from different colors with 90 cards in them. You can't mix and match between the decks, and 30 of those 90 cards are locked. So you basically start off with a basic starter deck of each of the colors, and there's none of that deck management in the same way that Assassin's Creed Recollection works. And so you're basically, the green deck is good for this, the red deck is good for this. You don't have that mix and match, because one of the good things about Magic, and one of the most confusing things, and quite a lot of the tactics, in fact, is in picking your deck before you even play, because that's kind of how you determine how your playstyle is going to be. There's a certain element of luck. You can't, of course, pick cards straight out of your deck. You only get 7 in your hand at the start of the game. But you make your own luck by how you set out your deck. And that's kind of taken away from you with Jewels of the Planeswalkers. The upshot of that, though, is that if you've not played Magic or you've not played Jewels of the Planeswalkers or whatever, then it's very easy to pick up compared to, say, picking up Magic the Gathering. So it's fun. It's the same as the PC version, almost down to the letter. The only difference is that you can only play two-player multiplayer, not four, which is good because Magic, in my opinion, doesn't work with four players. It's crazy. You just have loads of creatures blocking all the time. It's not very interesting. It's really good. It's really fun. I've really enjoyed it. I prefer it to Ascension. And the only game that could probably sway me away from it in the next week or two is going to be Dominion. So we'll see when Dominion comes out. But that's not a card collecting game, that's a deck builder. And you'll know what those differences are between those two when Dominion comes out. But yeah, it's very good. If you've got a passing interest in Magic, it is $6.99, though. Don't be fooled by its free price tag. But I would definitely download it free to try out the first, I think it's just the first level, but try it out and see what you think. And it's just really nice. It's the best version of the game out of the three available, so consoles, PC and iPad. But just because you're dragging cards, you're not like, on the console it doesn't feel right when you're moving the joypad, and on the PC it doesn't feel right when you're doing the mouse. There's a sort of disconnection between what you want to do and what is actually happening on screen with those two control methods. iPad, I want to move this card, you're there, bam. And I know it sounds really small, but just that one element makes that version the best, even though it doesn't have four player multiplayer. So yes, a 9 out of 10 for me. I don't know what the actual person reviewing the game will give it, but I really enjoy it.
Is there? I don't know what the Magic the Gathering community is like, but is there a kind of obviously a huge crossover of people who love the card game go on and play the iPad game and think it's wonderful, or is there a kind of a purist group who are like, no, the only way to do it is with real cards and real fingers stuff.
It's probably actually another divide in that, which is the ones which think that the real way to do it is to literally translate Magic the Gathering to computers. And actually start with a starter deck, build your cards up, you know, open up booster packs with different colored cards in. Because this one basically has 10 decks pre-constructed that you then move cards around from when you unlock them. I mean, there was older Magic games, like the one on the PC from the late 90s, I think, where you had like a 3D isometric world to walk around in. They were actually much more in keeping with how the game works in terms of standard play. So I can imagine some people would be frustrated just with the fact you can't customize your decks as much as they would like. But by doing that, you don't have so much complication. You can get playing almost straight away.
Hmm. I may give that a whirl. I'm curious about it because I played the physical card game a while back.
Yeah.
Thought it was intriguing, but I never had the arse to actually start collecting cards and swapping and things.
Yeah,
but
what I found was I had my own starter deck back in the day. I had actually two, I think. But the problem was that if you bought a pack of, you know, new cards, almost all the time, none of them would really fit with the deck. You had to buy another one.
Yeah. But this is good.
Yeah, this is good. Who wants to go next?
Well, I'll go next because I don't have... Well, I've only played it for about sort of half an hour, 40 minutes. So I can give passing observations, but it's sort of interesting anyway. I've been playing Project 83113, which is supposed to be Bell in Leet speak, I believe. Project Bell. It is a... it's an endless runner, technically. But it's one of those ones that is, like all the other endless runners I've been playing recently, is mixing it up with lots of other elements as well. So you are playing as this... From what I can work out, it's a space kitten with four arms and guns. From the planet Space Kitten, I can only assume. Although, actually, in the intro animation stuff, they are drawing significant parallels between this mutant space kitten and Simba from The Lion King.
Nice.
They've got that actual shot of like him being the space baby space kitten being held up with the beam of light coming down and all the other villagers going, oh, they've got that actual shot in the opening sequence. So yes, it's just like Simba, only he's a mutant gun-toting psycho, which is a film that Disney have made but should. You have to. It's kind of like the Endless Runner aspect has got more in common with the Mirror's Edge game. So you're swiping left to move left, swiping right to move right, and swipe up will make your character jump, and swipe down it'll dive under obstacles. So and if you hold it, it will actually come to a stop. So technically, it's Endless Runner, but you can actually bring the character to a halt, which is slightly more unusual. You're charging through the levels, dodging obstacles, jumping over platforms as well. Big laser beams come in and start blocking off certain areas, so you have to dive underneath them. And there's an awful lot of floating artillery that comes in and tries to blow you away. Now, your space kitty retaliates by firing its four guns, but you don't control the firing of the guns, for the most part, anyway. The kitten automatically fires when something comes in range. You can choose to activate actual attacks by tapping on the enemies, and it'll launch a very powerful attack. But in doing so, you lose a chunk of your energy, which becomes problematic when in the later levels when they really start throwing an awful lot of ammunition at you. It's done, the character's done in a very much cel-shaded style, quite good. The backgrounds are actually slightly more simplistic. I might say sterile, something like that. They're not quite as pretty as the main character is for some reason. Initially, it seems quite easy to grasp. They keep building more layers, so changing directions, jumping, leapfrogging off of walls so you can ping your way up to hidden areas. But the more you get through, very quickly, they really do start throwing an awful lot of this artillery at you. And it becomes quite difficult to get through levels without dying at least once. And again, they've got that thing of there are in-app purchases floating around in the background, which you can use to boost yourself a wee bit. I think, because I was checking it, and it seemed quite sort of tough. I had a look at the reviews up on our site, and I can't remember who actually reviewed it, but our reviewer pointed out, I think it was John. Yeah, John Denton mentioned it.
John Denton, yeah.
Yes, our man, John Denton. He seems to take to it even worse than I did, basically thought that, well, he suggested if you were feeling cynical that there might be a connection between the extreme difficulty curve and the prominent in-app purchases, like they're making it difficult on purpose. I don't know about that. I haven't got it through far enough to judge. I wouldn't like to say either way, but it does get tough very quickly. It's kind of fun for the most part. It's got a nice sense of kineticism to it, I suppose. Yeah, the moving is good. When stuff starts firing, you can kind of swipe down to sort of scoot under the bullets. That's quite nice. And you're jumping over to avoid. But there's a disconnect between yourself, your character, and defeating the enemies, because the auto fire is kind of annoying. It almost feels like a lot of the time it feels like I want to be controlling the guns. I want to be choosing when to fire and when not to fire. As I say, you can activate these power attacks, but that you can only do them every so often because it really does drain your health. And there's, I don't know, it almost feels like it doesn't quite know what it wants to be, whether it wants to be a traditional platformer where, you know, you would use dual analog sticks, and they've decided to make it kind of Endless Runner like, but it seems to straddle the two. And I don't know. It's not that it's not bad. It's I'm still sort of interested to play. I'll push through a bit further, but I don't know. It seems a little bit neither one thing nor the other, and I don't know if it would benefit from having actual physical, you know, having dual thumbsticks or something like that, perhaps, or whether that would just make situation worse. But it's very well presented, and it's good to have something that is at least a bit challenging. Some of the stuff you can obviously walk through very quickly, and this pretty tough pretty early, so you know that could be commendable. I have yet to discover whether it gets ridiculously so and whether it's just pointlessly cynical, or whether they're just, you know, giving you a challenge. But it's if you're into the Endless Runners, it's probably at least worth a look. I think it's free at the moment. Again, everything I get seems to go free at the moment. I think it's free right now, so if you wanted to give it a test, then by all means. But yeah, I'm not 100% convinced, but worth a look.
Peter?
I've been playing Fruit Ninja.
Fruit what?
I know.
Who? Where?
Fruit Ninja. It is a video game. And basically, the concept, if you don't know what it is, and I didn't know what it is, because obviously this is part of me exploring the back catalogue. It's essentially a game where you hold the iPhone in landscape, and a bunch of fruit gets thrown up into the air, and you control a sword with your finger, and you swipe on the screen, and that cuts, and you slice through the fruit. And once in a while, they'll throw up a bomb as well. And if you slice through the bomb, it's game over automatically. And if you drop three fruit, it's game over. The idea is you just got to keep going and keep going and keep going. This is kind of in the normal mode, which is the only mode I really like to play. And swipe as many fruit as you possibly can. And you compete against your friends with high scores. And you unlock little trinkets. It's really good. It's really good.
I was ready for you to say that. if you weren't going to say that, then this podcast is over.
Yeah. It's got a few little things that it doesn't do as well as I would like it to. I'll come on to those in a second. But I think the reason it's so compelling is that it is, you fire it up, it takes moments to get into, and it's the pièce de résistance when it comes to 2 minute gaming. It's that thing of I've got literally nothing to do, or I'm just going to take a 4 minute cigarette break or whatever, and like I'll just go, I'm going to play Fruit Ninja. And I think the reason it does that is obviously it ties in with these with the high scores. So I managed to beat Mark Brown's high score 1 week, which I was very proud of because he's very good at video games. There is stuff to unlock, and it kind of just comes kind of naturally. You don't.
I
really
like the satisfaction of just slicing the fruit. I think they really nail that.
I really like this. I really, obviously, the swipe is always just on it, not even talking about Fruit Ninja now, but just using an iPhone, just swiping the iPhone is actually a really pleasant experience. And doing so in Fruit Ninja and accompanied by that thwok kind of sound.
Yeah, that sound effect.
Oh. It is fantastic. And unlocking new sword effects, you know, like a dark, I've got a dark sword at the moment, but you can unlock, you know, multiple colored ones, and the American flag swipe. And you know, it's kind of cool how it does all of that. But there are tiny little things about it that I don't like. One is that I've played it a fair amount and I still don't understand why I get a critical.
I never worked that out.
Yeah, for somebody who wants to whose job it is to understand games, like I want to understand why that happens so I can do it more often. That's one of the few sort of mechanics that I don't understand, because obviously
do you think it's a perfect slice, as in like half half?
When the game starts off quite slowly, as you know, and I was trying to figure out if it was that, and I don't think it is. But the little extra bits that they throw in, is it a star fruit that they throw in and you keep swiping at
it?
Really, really.
It's a new feature. Last time I played Fruit Ninja was on the Android. Wow. On the old Android.
Oh dear. Here we go. Yeah. On the C3PO. So basically, I think it might be a... it's a large fruit, basically. And they throw it onto the screen. And if you swipe it once, everything slows down into bullet time. And you swipe really, 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 really quickly. And then it's like you're sort of doing like a cut... Death of a Thousand Cuts kind of thing. Like... and then it explodes and it's like red juice hits the thing and it's very, very, it's very satisfying. But the only other thing that I really don't like about it is that the way that they show that the fruit has been cut is a complete fluff. So when you do swipe through a fruit, it doesn't actually cut a 3D object in the way that you have cut that fruit. And I know it's a tiny little flaw with it. But when I know that I've just skimmed a fruit, I want to see just the end taken off. Like that, to me, would have been even better. But as it happens, you just kind of go halfway through it and it's always perfect every single time. It's got multiplayer and I've played a few people online and that's really good fun as well. You get assigned different colored fruit and you have to get yours. And if you get your opponents, then you're...
See, this wasn't there when I was playing.
Oh, seriously,
all this stuff
update
is all mental new.
Genuinely, update it.
Well, I don't think the shares... this is the only problem. My score doesn't share across... cross-platform, I don't think. Because you wouldn't... you'd have beaten my score.
Well, I think I might have, because I'm actually a pretty good Fruit Ninja.
I only play on the timer. I only play on the timer mode, because that's where the professionals play.
Think that that's true. I think that actually the normal is...
when you've only got a minute to spare at a time, because I'm a busy person in between important meetings. I grab a coffee and a bagel, and then I play one minute.
Beat all of you, yeah. My mum. And I'm not actually saying that obnoxiously. I enjoy Fruit Ninja vicariously. I enjoy it through watching my mum play it. Because when we first gave her an iPad and I booted up Fruit Ninja and I was like, this will do the trick. And like you just said, it's within like 30 seconds, you've got it. You know exactly what it is. And just watching her watching her literally suss it out in front of me and then start immediately just involved with it. Wow. And then all the little whoops of elation and the jabards and stuff. I like seeing the effect it has on other people.
It's so simple and yet so elegantly designed that it feels much more of a complicated product than it actually is. And that's what I really, really like about it. There's so much more complexity and depth to it than you might initially think, because it is a very simple mechanic, but it is so, I did unfortunately find myself sort of sitting on the couch and go, I'll just have a quick game of this. And then like half an hour later and I've drained half my battery or whatever it is. I genuinely do think it is fantastic, and I'm glad I had a chance to check it out.
Well, thank you very much, everyone. This has been a very long podcast, looking at the recording time.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, look at that. I hope everyone's enjoyed it though and hasn't fallen asleep, because that would be bad. We will be back next week. Probably going to have Keith with us. He's ill again this week, if you're wondering where he was.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a bit of Mr. Jordan.
Yeah, about time we get some of that Jordan back. Yeah.
and no doubt all of us as well. So we will see you guys, or hear. No, we won't really. We'll talk at you guys next week. All that's left for me to say is thank you very much to my guests on the panel this week. Thank you to Peter Whittington.
That's okay.
And thank you to James Gilmore.
Much obliged, my lad.
Welcome back.
What?